Hey, we just had a little break.
Actually, I did start over, but that's. I don't know if it'll. There'll be two recordings on.
Yeah, I think so too. So they'll be able to edit that.
So how much do you need?
That's good. That's good right there.
Yeah, Dave. Thanks for wandering so far off. So those of you editing this, it fell. I moved too fast and it fell. And so you're getting part two here. All right. So this is one of the things that I've learned about the ways of God that helps me as a disciple maker. Thanks, James. The godly man in you just continues to emerge. So I had a pastor friend of mine from here in town call me. We had never met, but we'd heard of each other over the years. He's a very good public communicator and good church. And he just said, "Can I take you to lunch?" Well, when someone asks you to lunch, is that not always the will of God? You know, so I said, "Sure." So we meet at J. Alexander's, and you know, the first 5-10 minutes, I could tell this is going to be a good friend, and we've continued our friendship. And so you know, the first 5-10 minutes was, "Tell me about your family," you know, all that kind of stuff. And then he got really serious with me. Kind of, he said, "Let me tell you why I asked you here." And he leaned across the table and he said, "This." He said, "In my particular denomination," he said, "we really know the scriptures." And he said, "I could bring people here that could highlight Hebrews for you, give you an overview of Romans." And then he looked at me and said this, kind of in a whispered, serious tone. He said, "But they're not being transformed." And he said, "What am I not doing?" He said, "I know you have a heart to disciple people so there's actual transformation. Can you help me?" I said, "Well, I'll just tell you where I am in my journey." And I said, you know, right? And I called him by name. I said, "You know that the devil knows the Bible really well, but he's not transformed."
Right.
See, just knowing the Bible doesn't make you spiritual. It just makes you, you know, the Bible. All right? There's a big difference. Matthew 7, Jesus says this to us. He says, "Those who hear my words and do them are like a wise man who builds his house on the rock." You know that story. He says, but he starts the second one the same way. "Those who hear my words..." Both are hearing, "and does not do them as a foolish man who builds his house on the sand." And what's happening, we have a culture of Bible study without application. And we've all grown up, if you've grown up in the church, this is a norm for us. And we have a bunch of people that know the Bible, but there's not real transformation. And this dear pastor friend, he said, "Dave," kind of just went on, he said, "So here's my issue, Dave." He said, "I got men in the church who know the word, they could highlight Hebrews for you, but they're not better husbands. I got people in the church who could, you know, review Romans for you right now, but they could care less about the poor in our city." And you know, he's just illustrating for me the realities of this. And for me, I've always found that one of the greatest hindrances to discipleship is Bible studies. Okay? Not the Bible, but Bible studies. And it's because we learn and we learn and we learn without apply. Well, see, that puts us in the same category as the devil's knowledge of the Bible. That's what, I mean, he knows the Bible, but he's not transformed. He's quoting it to Jesus, like kind of hidden passages of the Old Testament he's pulling out. And so one of the things that you and I have to understand, it's about applying this stuff into our lives. That's the ways of God. And so I want to show you what I showed this pastor. I had my finger and I just drew it on the table. So let's start with this one. Let's call this transformation, okay? So that's our aim, is transformation, a life transformed, okay? Where the husband loves his wife more, the wife loves her husband more, the man is beginning to have a prayer life, the man is beginning to be in the Word and apply, you know, whatever the transformation is that's needed, okay? So let me tell you about this. You can't transform anybody. Have you learned that? It's like, I mean, no matter how much we try to do it, you can't transform jack squat. All right? You just can't. You can't transform anything. But God takes the size of a little apple seed, and he uses this thing, and he transforms an apple seed not only into a tree, but other apples, and not only that, but orchards. From one little seed, God can take and reproduce thousands of orchards. That's a pretty powerful transformation process. All right? That's the power. God is the only one that can actually change someone. So whoever you're thinking about right now, like, "Oh, I wish my mom would just, or my son, or my..." Just know, God is the only one that can transform somebody. Okay? Then when we come over here, I want to use the word revelation. And don't think of like the book of the Bible, Revelation. It applies to this too. But there's a word that we get for revelation that gives this meaning. I want you to think about like being at a junior high play. And you walk into the auditorium, you're there with your son, your daughter, your grandchild, your niece, your nephew, a friend. And you know how it goes. There's the theater seating, there's the stage, and there's usually, if you notice, it's either black, navy blue, or burgundy curtains, you know, never green or yellow. But anyway, and so you got these big, thick curtains, and someone flicks the lights, you know you're to be quiet, go sit down. You go sit down. 1 minute before those curtains open, you have no idea what's up there. 5 seconds before, no idea. And also when the curtain opens, like, oh my gosh, it's a Hawaiian island, it's a space shuttle, it's an old western town, it's the Mayflower, whatever. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's the meaning of revelation. I have not seen it. Now I see. That's revelation. And it's something that hits our hearts. Okay, not just do our minds get the benefit? Huge. But it's something in here in our spirit, in our heart, where I see, like, if you have given your life to Jesus, you've already experienced this, because there was a moment like, once I was lost, now I'm found. So if you've given your life to Jesus and not just stayed in church life your whole life, but you have experienced exactly what I'm talking about. So this is not like a whole new thing to you. All right? But here's the thing. You can't make revelation happen. The thing I love about it is, I can position myself for it. The fact that you're here is allowing you to be positioned to see. The fact that you're Sunday morning, the fact you have quiet time, or you're in fellowship, or in your word, I mean, there's a gazillion ways. You can position yourself. So in my morning times with the Lord, I'm positioning myself for revelation. God, as I'm in your word, as I'm praying, as I'm listening to you, I want to position myself so when I kiss Cheryl goodbye and walk out the door, my heart is primed for whatever God wants to show me. If I had not done that, I would not have been sensitive to this mother and her daughter walking by, because I was sensitive to it when I felt like the Lord said, I want to reveal something to you to share. Okay? Then all I had to deal with was, okay, the pee in the pants moment. Do you step forward or do you chicken out? See? Okay? So, remember Jesus? He says to the guys, hey, who do people say that I am? Remember that? And they say, oh, some say you're John the Baptist, some say you're Elijah, some say you're one of the prophets. And then he says, who do you say I am? And who pipes up?
Peter.
Always. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now listen to Jesus' words after that. Flesh and blood has not
revealed.
Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. See, we cannot, flesh and blood cannot get spiritual revelation. So this should help you when you're praying for your lost friends, because you realize, I can talk till I'm blue in the face. Blah, 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 blah. But until the Lord goes like this, they can't see. So guess how you need to pray? God, give them revelation of Jesus. Let them see the Son of God. Then, just like somebody prayed for you. Okay? So look at, God's doing the heavy lifting. God does this part. God does this part. What's your part? It's right here. Obedience. When God reveals something to you, I want you to catch this. When God reveals something to you, it's not meant to be negotiated. It's meant to be obeyed. And we usually negotiate it. Well, maybe on Tuesday. Well, and we kind of take it like, you remember when you'd go to the guidance counselor in high school and, you know, they gave you, well, here's your options. Here's the universities and the trade schools. And you kind of go, And sometimes we take God that way. When God reveals something to you, like, for example, God reveals to you have a bad relationship with your dad and he wants that restored. It's not a matter of, well, I'll just put that on the shelf and pray about that, think about that for the next 5 years. God wants you to act on that. Now, is it fine and appropriate to say, Lord, when and how? Of course. But he's saying to you, I am moving in this area. I am preparing your father's heart. I am preparing, and if you don't obey, guess what? We become the foolish person building our spiritual walks on sand. And when the crash comes, it crashes. But when God reveals something to you, he intends for us to obey. That's why he's saying it to you. See, it's not hard. This is not hard. It's just learning to cultivate and pay attention to what God's revealing to you, and then you obeying that thing. See, this is the ways of God. This is how people get transformed. For example, let me illustrate this scripturally. Remember the story of Philip? Go up to the chariot. Revelation. Go up to the chariot. Okay. He goes up to the chariot out of obedience. The Ethiopian gets saved. And not only does the Ethiopian get saved, but history tells us that the Ethiopian went back to his own nation and started church planting. So one, you're going, yeah, but what's the big deal of go up to the chariot? Remember, God can take a very little thing of obedience and transform a nation. Okay? And you guys, this is where my walk with Jesus becomes exciting. It's I get to do this every day. And so every day when I get up, I know, you know, I might have my schedule like today. I know I was going to be here. Cheryl's going to take me to the airport. I fly up. I have to speak at a church tonight. And in the process, though, I can be paying attention to what God's showing me, and he's giving me opportunities to obey. This is where you start living life. This is where I'm convinced that this emerging generation, you know, we get so swallowed into things like the big spectacular things on the screen, and it just has to get bigger and louder and better, and we're getting worn out with that because it comes and it goes. This, what I'm talking about, allows us to engage with God and see real transformation happen. First in me, but then secondly, amazing to me, because the Bible calls me a little jar of clay, you and I, through me. He displays his splendor, his beauty, his glory through these little jars of clay. Is that not freaking amazing? Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me. And all I have to do is lean into him enough to hear what he's saying through the scriptures, by the Spirit, through the circumstances, you know, the various ways God speaks, and just be willing to obey that. That's it. Let me tell you of a dramatic pee in my pants moment I had that forever brought the fear of the Lord on my life and great joy. So I'm speaking to a group, maybe of 30 missionaries. And the person said, hey, be done at 2:30. So the clock like here was kind of right in front of me. So I was kind of monitoring that. And it was about 25 after I shut my books. I was going to be with them the next day. And so I said, hey, tomorrow, we'll blah, blah, blah. And about, you know, where James and BJ are sitting, there was a lady sitting back there. And my eyes just kind of glanced past, you know, I'd seen her all morning as I've been teaching. But I've learned to pay attention when I have a little pause inside. It's kind of like I got this parenthesis inside. And whenever I feel that, I know the Lord's saying, I want to fill that parenthesis with something for that person. Another pee in my pants moment. Because I don't want to look like an idiot. And I don't want to, I know this isn't a word, but de-glorify God. You see what I'm saying? I don't want to do either of those things. But I had to step out because the Lord revealed, now it's up to obedience. And so I ask her name. I'm buying a little time. She tells me, finally, there it is. I submit, hey, and I don't ever say, thus saith the Lord, hark, lo unto thee. I don't do that. can I just run something by you? Because I know I have the propensity to miss it, all right? So can I run something by you? And she says, sure. And so I just, maybe 45 seconds to a minute long, wasn't this big, long, hairy thing. And when you start seeing tears, and I just said, am I in the ballpark? She said, thank you, that's exactly what I need to hear. Awesome, pee in the pants moment averted. Until I turned about where you're sitting, there's a gal leaning up against the wall, sitting on the floor. And there was the same thing. And so I asked her name, and the Lord gave me something. Well, when I was done, she shouted three times, no way! Like, really loud. And we all kind of look at it and go, wait, like, what's going on? And you know, when Jesus does something, you're willing to tell on yourself. And here's what she said, you guys. She said, when you were giving Carmen that impression you had, she said, I kept saying to myself, he's totally making this up. This has nothing to do with the Lord. And here's what she said, Lord, if this is real, give him something for me right now. And she said, when I said that, you turned. I didn't know that. But you know what? That girl will tell that story till she goes to heaven. Mm-hmm. See, all I had to do was obey. I didn't know that was going on in her mind at all. But I just knew. But you guys, because I'm a human being, I have the propensity, I could chicken out. No, this can't be God. The only way you know is stepping into it. And here's what I love. If I screw up, it's character building time. Because I get to humble myself. And I can say, you know what? Obviously I missed that. I'm sorry. Never mind. Let's go to pizza. You know? But it lets you exercise humility. But you never know till you step out. Okay? So when God's revealing something to you, pay attention. Don't just blow by it like la, 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 la. And just try to rely on your own wisdom. Listen to what he has to say. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do this last one, and I'll pitch it back here to James and DJ. So, the fourth one on here is the gift of the ways of God is, in this passage, is I will give you rest. I will give you rest. In the Hebrew, it literally means to settle down, to make quiet, to cause things to align. You know, Jesus said that he would give us rest. And one of the things I have found is when I walk in God's ways, I cease striving. I'm trying to make something happen. I cease striving. And instead I'm able to walk in rest and walk in peace. Because I know, okay, God, I'm trusting your character. I'm trying to walk in your ways. And this isn't like a performing, lockstep, rigid. It's a relationship. And I just want to encourage you, God wants to teach you his ways. Now, on the back end of this, you're going to see there's some illustrations of the ways of God. You can fill those in and just take a little time and reflect on those, of snapshots of the ways of God, because there's many of them there. Maybe at Q&A time, we can talk about some of that as well. Okay? Back to you.